Welcome to this episode of the Satellite World Briefing Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hunsaker. Today we're diving into one of the hottest topics in telecommunications, the convergence of the cellular and satellite worlds. Together we'll explore the transformative potential of this integration and the exciting vision of the ubiquitous network. Joining me in the studio are Jerry Collins and Ken Takagi, who will share their expert insights on the implications of this groundbreaking development and the new applications it will enable for the industry and end users alike. I hope you enjoy our conversation today.
Lucas, yeah, thanks very much for having me back on. And this time I thought I'd bring a colleague. You know, we had some fantastic responses and a great engagement from the first podcast. I thought we might try and go into a little bit more kind of detail on some of the interesting partnerships we have. So I've asked one of my colleagues to join us, Ken Takagi, who I've worked with for a number of years. He's prime in a number of our key activities in this area. So maybe you give Ken a chance to introduce himself, and then we'll talk about some of the interesting stuff he's been working on.
Hi, good morning. I'm Ken Takagi, and thanks for having me on this podcast. My role is in business development at Intelsat. My focus is on developing strategic commercialization of new technologies, and in particular, our next generation network.
Okay, Ken. Now, for me and some of our colleagues in Intelsat, and maybe some of our colleagues even wider in the industry, you've become a little bit synonymous with a term called the ubiquitous network. So can you tell us a little bit of what the ubiquitous network vision means for you and how it's been, that term has been deployed in the industry?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's best if I use an example here. When we travel, we can go to pretty much any country in the world and we can take our smartphones with us, and our phones will work anywhere from the moment that our planes land. And we just take that for granted. The phones work as if we are in our home country, and we don't need to set up a new account with the local telco, and we don't need to get separate invoices for each country that we visit. And that all works because all the MNOs around the world have built their networks based on common standards. Used to be 4G and now it's 5G. And also because they have established roaming relationships with each other, which allow them to exchange all sorts of data, authorization data, authentication data, usage and billing data. They track what we do with our phones when we're abroad and automatically exchange data behind the scenes. So when I travel to the UK with my American phone, the usage information about me gets relayed from the UK back to my carrier back in the US, and I just get the billing as part of my regular invoice at the end of the month. I use that example because we are looking to set up a very similar ecosystem, or really extending that ecosystem from just sort of terrestrial mobile networks now to non-terrestrial networks, or NTN, as we call it in the industry. And we are looking to allow end users to move between terrestrial and satellite networks, and over time between satellite and satellite networks operated by different satellite operators, and enjoy seamless connectivity and convenient services wherever they go. Now, this is the ubiquitous network vision. And this has been one of our key goals for our next generation network, which is a program that we've been working on for about 7 years now. And our next generation network is all about embracing open standards, particularly 5G, to enable satellite networks to become compatible with other networks, both satellite and terrestrial.
And Kenny, who do we see benefiting mostly from this ubiquitous network? What would be the use cases, and who would be the people who really derive the value from this ubiquitous network?
It's a good question. And benefit the most are those that move around. These could be land or sea-based mobility users with vehicles or vessels that actually move. In the industry terms, we call it comms on the move. Or it could be somebody that wants to take a terminal, move it temporarily to a fixed location. That's what we call comms on the pause. And to give you some examples, things like connected car, connected vehicle, first responders, agriculture, construction, or truck fleet operators, you know, maritime use cases and some military use cases will all come under this umbrella. We also believe that there will be applicability in fixed network use cases as well. These are cases where, you know, the user is going to stay in one place. This could be an enterprise use case. It could be a government use case. And this is where the user may want to have a terminal that will use terrestrial networks as the primary source of communication, but have the satellite as, you know, an easy and seamless backup. And really, you know, what will happen for those users, the benefit for those users is that end users will be able to go anywhere in the world with one affordable terminal and always stay connected to a high-performance broadband network with a simple single account and subscription plan and get one bill from their provider at the end of the month.
I just want to interject for a moment, Jerry. So Ken, I think this would be very interesting for our audience. Can you give us an example of a limitation today or what is currently not working that the ubiquitous network will solve?
The limitation that we have today is that obviously the satellites do cover these rural areas. So in a sense, the satellites are already complementing terrestrial mobile networks. But in order, for example, an agriculture vehicle to be able to enjoy the kind of connectivity that we are envisaging to offer with the ubiquitous network, they would need to get a separate satellite terminal, a separate cellular terminal, and have separate contracts for each, right? And, you know, the two networks would not be talking to each other, so they would have to get some sort of, they would have to get an additional device like an SD-WAN device to connect the two terminals and manage the two networks in the way that they want the networks to perform, right? So this means that there's multiple pieces of hardware that they would need to deploy on a vehicle which has limited real estate, and they would have to go through multiple layers of paperwork, right? And so, you know, and there's a third benefit, which is around, you know, the fact that by deploying a 5G satellite solution, the technology that we offer on the satellite, which today is proprietary, is going to be standards-based. And we are in a better position then to mass provision the 5G-based solution. So it's going to be easier for us to manage not just the interactivity between the terrestrial and satellite network, but to do that on a mass scale in orders of magnitude of potentially millions, as opposed to you know, lesser numbers that you know we would be able to support today. So hopefully that helps. We're going to take a lot of the you know the burden that would be on the user or the operator off of their backs and make the proposition of the ubiquitous network and broadband connectivity everywhere a user goes to be much easier and simpler. And we are going to be able to support those users en masse.
Yeah, and I think, Ken, that's a really good link for us to back to kind of the first podcast we did a few weeks ago, where we talked about Ku-band and we talked about the importance of standardization. And to be able to give that example, that if you really want to scale these deployments and make it easy for people to deploy across tens or even hundreds of thousands of vehicles or units, standards are so important, just in terms of how you manage the network, but also how you reach the kind of cost points. So I think that's a really good example of the standardization being so important, which again links us back to the conversation we had a couple of weeks back in the first podcast on this subject.
Yeah. And if I can add, there's one other inconvenience potentially today, which is that, you know, each satellite operator, you know, uses their own proprietary technology, right? Which isn't great. This is the way that the satellite industry has been set up today. And so, you know, the user in the agricultural vehicle, if the vehicle were to move around, right, and lose the coverage of one satellite, you know, would have to provision further hardware to be able to communicate with a different satellite operator. Whereas with the ubiquitous network vision, multiple satellite operators, if they are using the same technology, would be compliant with the terminal that's installed in the vehicle.
So Ken, that sounds, you know, there's a lot of similarities in what you've just described to something we hear a lot about in the media at the moment, which is the talks of direct to device. There's a lot of hype, a lot of excitement, and, you know, this possibility that using your cellular smartphone, you'll be able to move between satellite and cellular. Where do you position this ubiquitous network when we compare to direct to device? Is it the same? Some differences? How would you describe the differences?
Yeah, that's another really good question. And what we're proposing with the ubiquitous network is different from direct to device as we know it. And at the same time, I would say it's complementary. There are similarities and there are differences. The similarities are that both solutions allow end users to stay connected outside the coverage of terrestrial cellular networks. So they will be connected, at least in theory, wherever they go. The difference is that direct-to-device works on consumer devices, or it's designed to work on consumer devices, and it's a narrowband solution, so a lower bitrate solution that will support text and voice, and maybe some low-speed web browsing, whereas the ubiquitous network solution that we are proposing is an enterprise-grade broadband solution, which is offered via a universal terminal. So the benefit to direct-to-device is that it will connect to consumer device like your smartphone, whereas the benefit of the ubiquitous network is that you will require a professional grade terminal, but it will support broadband connectivity wherever you go in the world. And, you know, the reason why direct to device is inherently narrowband is, you know, to explain in detail is a bit complicated, but it's due to the link budget, you know, to access the small antenna in our phones from satellite is a tough proposition from a satellite that's 500, 1,000 kilometers up in the sky. It's also a function of the spectrum that is available to the phone. Inherently, to get to connect to your smartphone, you're going to want a very low frequency, and you're not going to have much frequency to play with, whereas the ubiquitous network vision is focused around Ku band, potentially Ka band, higher frequencies where you have a lot of spectrum available, and with the combination of that with a professional grade terminal, you're going to get broadband communications. But as I said, the two are complementary to each other.
So Ken, I'm glad you brought up the Ku band, because that was one of the conversation topics we had on our first podcast together with Lucas, where we looked at, you know, the value of, you know, this considerable amount of spectrum coming available for the NTN or satellite based communications. Now I know you've been working on Intelsat for this for a while, but the kind of exciting thing for us now is that it's not just Intelsat, but we have a couple of industrial partners who are very much committed to the ubiquitous network, and it's kind of central to their strategy. So I know we made an announcement recently with SoftBank to collaborate on this. Can you just give us a little bit more of an idea of what that collaboration with SoftBank will involve, and what we're doing to contribute to that vision?
Yeah, sure. So Intelsat and SoftBank have entered into a landmark collaboration agreement. And the agreement is to jointly design and demonstrate new hybrid network solutions that integrate Intelsat's next generation 5G satellite network with SoftBank's terrestrial 5G mobile network. Now, the primary objective of the collaboration is to integrate our respective 5G networks to demonstrate how user terminals can roam between our two networks, right? One is satellite, the other is terrestrial, both are 5G, and we're looking to enable a seamless handoff of a user terminal as it moves from the terrestrial network to a satellite network and vice versa. The roaming referred to itself is really the same as the roaming relationships that I referred to earlier that exist today between terrestrial networks that allows our phones to work anywhere we travel, as per the example I gave you earlier. Another key ingredient about the collaboration is developing the universal 5G terminal, right, that will allow the end users to connect to the best combination of networks, be it satellite or terrestrial, in 5G, wherever they go. And SoftBank is a great partner for us because they share the same ubiquitous network vision. In fact, I think they started using the word ubiquitous network before we did. They are focused on developing NTN solutions, non-terrestrial network solutions, as a complement to their terrestrial networking capabilities. And they have already made some strategic investments in that regard. And you know, for us, it helps us a lot to have a partner that has an operational terrestrial network to collaborate with in developing the seamless 5G technology over satellite. The agreement is not something that is limited to SoftBank. We are developing capabilities together that will have applicabilities throughout the industry with other MNOs, other satellite operators.
So Kenya, so that's a really interesting point there at the end, because you know, we know when you launch these kind of new technologies, particularly standards-based technologies such as we're talking about here, you do need, you know, multiple players to come into the market and engage and develop and interoperate, etc. I think one of the encouraging things is that since we made this announcement, we've seen quite a good reaction in the market. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that reaction and you know, why we view it now as very positive to a future ecosystem in this area?
Obviously, the partnership with SoftBank itself is very exciting for us, but the reaction from the industry has been great, and that's even more exciting for us. And the reaction has come from diverse sectors. We've had multiple MNOs, mobile network operators, reach out to us to learn more. They're interested in finding out ways of participating in the ubiquitous network. We've also seen interest from other non-terrestrial network operators as well. So we're kind of seeing industry momentum with multiple players from each sector, which is great because that's really what we want to achieve with the ubiquitous network vision. And also we've seen interest from the user community as well. In particular, we've seen interest from land mobile OEMs, manufacturers of trucks, agricultural equipment, cars, who are interested in a broadband network solution for the connectivity of their vehicles in the future. They want a solution that is available globally and is based on open standards and doesn't cause vendor or technology lock. Right. So, for example, if you talk to car manufacturers, they would like to have a communications module inside their vehicles in the future, which would comprise of a small and affordable connectivity terminal that they can factory fit on all of their future vehicles as they roll off the production line, with the assurance that that terminal will find a network to connect to in broadband anywhere on earth.
Yeah, Ken, look, I think that's where it starts to become real for many of us in terms of the actual use case, you know, where you can be guaranteed connectivity anywhere. You don't need to think twice about what kind of connectivity options you have installed. It's all part of the same bill. It's all part of the same unit. And it gives you that true kind of felt sense of ubiquity. Obviously, to deliver on this, there's kind of many different kind of focus areas that Intelsat's involved in. Do you want to kind of touch on some of those other activities that we're engaged in that are going to, you know, make this vision of the ubiquitous network happen?
Yeah, sure. So we are looking at the ubiquitous network and developing it as kind of a multi-pronged strategy. the first element is the standards themselves, right? In order for the ubiquitous network vision to materialize, we need standards to be developed, and for those standards to mature that involve satellites and various forms of satellite, particularly around Ku band, right, which is the frequency that we use on our geo satellites most of the time. And so in order to get those standards in place, we have had a team working within the standards body, 3GPP, for multiple years to support the development of appropriate 5G NTN standards. So that's the first area of activity. The second area of activity has been around working with the technology partners to develop an ecosystem of standards-based technology for NTN. So this includes the terminals, the antennas, and the modems themselves, as well as the chipsets that would go into those terminals, as well as the satellite platforms, right? The VSAT platforms that would support the new 5G waveform. We already have working systems in place based on prototype versions of the 5G NTN waveform. And effectively what we are doing there is we are working on technology today based on where we think the 5G NTN standards will end up, because the standards themselves are going to take a couple of years to get fully finalized. But we're not waiting for the standards to be finalized. We're working on what we assume they will be today. And in doing so, we can cut a lot of time in getting those new standards-based technology to market, because we make a good estimate of where those standards will end up. And then once the standards are finalized, we'll just make some small adjustments, hopefully, to that technology, and we'd be ready to commercialize much sooner than if we waited for the standards to be complete and then started the development at that time. And so the partnership with SoftBank really represents a third and what was hitherto a missing piece of the equation, which is that it will help us to develop a commercial and operational framework for applying the 5G NTN technology through the active integration of a satellite 5G network with an active terrestrial 5G network and developing the roaming relationship between the two. And so hopefully you get that by focusing on these key areas, we can expect to deliver the ubiquitous network vision much faster than if we worked in a linear manner and waited for something to complete before we start another.
So Ken, look, thank you very much for sharing that vision with us and some of those points at the end. And so Lucas, you know, if there is a way for us to kind of, you know, wrap this up, and I think one of the key points that Ken said there is that this isn't something that we want to be doing just with ourselves and SoftBank. It's really almost an invitation for other industry partners to come and work with us and create that industry ecosystem that can make these kind of use cases and applications really become global. So that is kind of a really good way to finish, is that kind of invitation to come and work with Intelsat, come and work with SoftBank and build this ecosystem that will deliver on the benefits we've talked through this podcast. So Lucas, again, thanks very much for the opportunity for myself and Ken to join with you on this podcast.
You're very welcome, Jerry. I appreciate you hosting this episode. But before we wrap up, I want to dive a little deeper into your last question. Now, Ken, you ended this with an invitation for MNOs to participate in the ubiquitous network. But I really want to ask exactly how can they start? Are they working on something similar? Talk to our audience about this.
So we're finding from the MNOs that reached out to us that many of them are indeed looking at or are working on projects with similar concepts. So SoftBank, certainly not alone. So we are looking at additional collaboration opportunities with some other MNOs, but also any MNO who wants to become part of this to, we encourage them first to learn more, please feel free to reach out to us if you're having any difficulties. And also, you know, there are, you know, opportunities to collaborate at the standards level in, you know, developing technology together, working with technology partners together. There are multiple ways for a given MNO to participate. And each MNO is going to have slightly different interests and priorities. And so, you know, we encourage you to reach out to us, and we're happy to talk to you and discuss together, right, how best you can participate in the Ubiquitous Network vision.
Okay, so Ken, like that's really interesting, you know, particularly as you talk about professional applications and, you know, broadband applications, because we see quite an active ecosystem at the moment in what we would call the narrowband applications, some of which you referred to on direct-to-device. We really see this as the next step, and certainly one that is complementary, but which is focused on more broadband applications. It's that ecosystem and those kind of partnerships in that domain that we're really interested in promoting.
All right, well, I have one final question, Ken. I know it's a little far away for the ultimate vision of all this, but what are the things we should start doing in the near future to get us to that ultimate vision of the ubiquitous network?
Yeah, so the end goal is going to take a number of years. We need to wait for the standards to be finalized and for the technology and solutions based on those standards to mature. But at the same time, some of the ingredients or many of the ingredients are already becoming available to us to use. And we already have active plans to apply the capabilities as they become available to us. So customers and users will start seeing some of the ingredients of the ubiquitous network vision becoming available to them as early as next year.
Thank you, Jerry and Ken, for joining us today. And a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. This was the Satellite World Briefing Podcast. To stay up to date on all the latest episodes, subscribe to our channel and follow us on LinkedIn. From GEO to LEO, MEO to you, transmitting today's out-of-this-world satellite news. Tune in next time for more celestial stories.